Now, the 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge scoreboard, presented by Home Bank. Good for business, good for life. Live from the Mercedes-Benz of Baton Rouge studios, here's Charles Hanegriff.
A punctuation point put on the end of the regular season. LSU hangs half a hundred on Texas A&M. 50-7, the final score. LSU 12-0, headed to Atlanta to play for the Southeastern Conference Championship. Joe Burrow becomes the SEC's all-time passing leader for a single season in both yards and tied for the most touchdowns ever. It was a throttling from start to finish as LSU took their first four possessions of the game and scored touchdowns. They held A&M at every turn in this game. It was every bit the beating that the score on the scoreboard looked like. There were no flukes here. There were no letdowns here. It was obvious that all of the storylines that we talked about during the week were all pretty much right on the money, that this LSU team very, very seriously wanted to atone for what happened last year, wanted to settle a score from what a game that they thought was taken from them in College Station a year ago, and the victory lap that A&M took afterwards and the aftermath of that game, 8 at LSU, something that they talked about way back at media days in July and that they carried around the back of their heads all year waiting for the opportunity to pay it back. For this group of seniors and for Joe Burrow, an extremely special night, and Burrow making it even more special to come out in the Burrow EAUX. It just proves that Joe Burrow not only has been the best player in college football all year, but that he gets it. He gets every single portion of it. He gets the play on the field. He gets his conduct off the field. He gets with this community. He gets everything. He's been as close to the perfect football player as you could ever possibly see. For the committee that on Tuesday said that Ohio State was a more complete team, the defensive piece, I believe very much that the defense took that to heart. They're supposed to block out the noise, but sometimes the noise is just a little bit too loud. And it looked to me like a defense playing with a chip on their shoulder that was out to prove something tonight and to hold Texas A&M to 12 first downs and 169 yards of total offense. They did everything that they possibly could to say, listen, a lot of the yards and scores that we've given up have been when the issue was long decided. So at 31-0 tonight at halftime, they did not let up. For Ed Orgeron, a perfect season. He has pushed every button correctly, every staff move, every personnel move. Everything has worked as well as it possibly could. And the Tigers head to Atlanta next week, Justin, as prohibitive favorites to win their first Southeastern Conference championship since 2011, advance to the playoffs as a high seed, whatever. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that tonight. But LSU looked like they went out there. They played angry. They played with a sense of urgency. And tonight felt really, really good if you were an LSU fan and had to put up with, like I said, the victory lap that A&M has been taking since last November.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I went there in January with the basketball team to play them, and they had the student section. They had the score 72-74 on their chest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, you know, they made the cups, the commemorative cups. I mean, yeah, they took a humongous victory lap. But I think, you know, those guys took it to heart because – throughout the week and after last week's game, you know, the goal was to hang 100, like to make them quit, like to tap out. You know, they were on pace before they made the first punt. If they kept scoring the way they were scoring, they would score 84 points.
The first half was almost a perfect half of football.
Yeah.
I mean, offense, it was almost a perfect half of football. Really, LSU got in a situation where at one point it looked like they would be able to name the score, and they really did. That, like I said, there was nothing flukish about tonight. There weren't a lot of turnovers or penalties or fluke plays. You know, it was just a complete domination from start to finish. The kind of game where, you know, I know they do the 24-hour rule and all that stuff, but this is the one where you can look back and go, man, that was – That was pretty.
Yeah, I'm going to let this soak a little bit.
that one was pretty. That one felt really good.
Anybody out there, especially being from the state of Louisiana, or even some Texas fans, you know how the Aggies get down.
Yeah.
You know how their fan base is, and they ride around. They got their rings on. You know, I flew on a plane back from Dallas a couple weeks ago. Flight attendant had his ring on. You know what I mean?
And how did the flight attendant get a ring?
I don't know. He was sitting there. Obviously, he's A&M grad, but he's actually – like looking at me because I got my LSU shirt on. He's like, it's coming.
Oh, good.
I'm like,
oh, good.
And I was trying to refrain from like cussing at him, but I really wanted to. But yeah, I mean, he's probably sulking in his tears at night. So I'm enjoying that.
I said this last week. I really believe this. You know, sometimes you just look and things are very, very clear. This one wasn't hard to see coming.
No,
I'm not taking any credit for being able to look at this and go, oh, I saw this. No, this one was very easy to see coming. They had LSU's attention, okay? And we know the big games this year, the Alabama game and what that meant. And to beat ranked Auburn and Florida here and how good those teams are. But this one was personal.
Oh, no, no.
This one was personal, and it was personal from the head coach all the way down. And I don't know if they're going to downplay that in the postgame or not, but it was very obvious to see.
Oh, of course. And people have no idea how close the Alabama – beating Alabama and beating A&M the way we did tonight are tied neck and neck. Like that feeling of like for those players
in their head,
like the way it meant, what it meant to them to after last year have to, you felt like you went in regular time, and then you felt like you won in overtime, the first couple overtimes, then to have it go the way it did, the distance of seven. I mean, this was an emotional roller coaster, but you saw this thing brewing. If you went to practice anytime this week, you knew what time it was. You was like, it will A&M be able to stop the bleeding?
And they couldn't.
They couldn't.
For Joe Burrow, just trying to put some of the numbers in the proper perspective. He finishes with 314 completions. That's the most in the SEC. The completion percentage at 78.3 is currently number one in the history of the NCAA. The 4366, that's passing yards that he finished with for the season, is the most in SEC history. The 44 passing touchdowns is tied for the most in SEC history. I thought they put it really good in the pregame on the network broadcast, which was he has completely rewritten the LSU record book. Yeah. And he'll hold pretty much every significant, not only the single season, he's going to hold some career records here.
Oh, no doubt.
For a guy that only played 2 years. That is beyond remarkable. So
yeah,
this was the way that I think this team envisioned this season ending all the way back into the summer. Because when you go to media days and they're talking about the 12th game, this is in July, okay? They're talking about the 12th game. There were plenty of other games they could have talked. They were talking about this game. We want a piece of those guys. Honestly, somebody called me earlier today and said, are you worried in the least bit about this game? I said, "You LSU winning? No. No realm can I see LSU losing this game, okay? Now, crazy stuff happens. It's just a sporting event. So I'm not going to tell you I expected 50-7 for sure, but I thought A&M was running into a buzzsaw. That's exactly what happened.
I said 60.
And look, had they wanted to, probably, could have scored more points. Loved what they did to get Burrow out of the game the way that they did, and let him get his ovation. Loved the senior day stuff. Sometimes it's a distraction. I didn't feel like that was in any way the case here tonight. Got to see one last time. The haka outside, which I think is one of the coolest things ever.
It's amazing.
The Fajoko family outside right before, and that was emotional before they even got into the stadium. Big win tonight. LSU caps off 12-0 in the regular season, 50-7. Hey, what was the score? 57-1. No, 50-7. Yeah. LSU wins it. We got the Coach O press conference. We got Jacob Hester down at Tiger Stadium. We believe that we will hear from Joe Burrow immediately after Coach O. So lots to get to. This is the Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
The the 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge Scoreboard, presented by Home Bank. Good for business, good for life on 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Tigers win it tonight by a score of 50-7, put the finishing touches on an undefeated season, 12-0, and headed to Atlanta for the Southeastern Conference Championship game next Saturday against the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, Justin, it was kind of a who's who there tonight. We had some celebrities out there. We just saw some of them on TV. We saw Marcus Allen was there. We saw Michael Thomas and Taysom Hill from the Saints were there. There was a
old school Alan Faneca, Jamarcus Russell, Matt Mock, Stephen Ridley, Alex Bregman.
Everybody wanted to come in for this one.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah,
this was actually, in my opinion, like as far as requests on my end, TFN.
Right.
This was probably more the on the upper echelon as far as Bama goes. Like, because Bama was here last year, we had to try to print extra tickets. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But with this, it's, being A&M and the way we lost last year, and it's not like A&M is a formidable opponent. So
not tonight for sure.
No.
Want to welcome those that are watching along with us on video, live streaming, 1045ESPN.com. And we got Coach O, so let's head there.
Rand and the staff, they work very, very hard, and I'm just so proud of them. What you can say about Joe, set the SEC record for passing yards, tied SEC for touchdowns, school records for points in a season. Staff, tremendous job, but you know what? We ain't done yet. And the guys in there are happy. We're happy we beat Texas A&M. We're happy we beat 12-0. We're going We block out the noise. We want to play. We want to be 12-0, and we're taking it one game at a time. We control our own destiny. We're just taking it one game at a time. No matter what anybody says, you know, they're going to pick this apart, pick that apart. It doesn't matter. You got to win a game. Yeah, I thought so. I thought our guys did. I thought that we had a good day of preparation today. We talked. Our seniors talked to our guys. Marcus Allen came in last night and talked to our football team and about poise and about character. I thought our guys were right on point today.
What did your defense prove today?
You know, I thought we rushed the passer very well. We dialed up some new blitzes. We put pressure on the quarterback. We didn't allow them to beat us one-on-one. I thought our DBs made some tremendous plays on the football. This is overall a tremendous night, overall package. What a difference a year makes.
What made the difference for the pass rush to get to this point?
Yeah, I just think that, I thought Kellerman had a good night. I thought Marcel had a good night. I thought we dialed up some different blitzes, some different stunts. I thought we had a good plan.
You've been looking for that 4-4 game all season. I guess why do you think tonight was
that
you finally did that?
I think that our guys know what's at stake, what's at stake. I think our defense had a little chip on their shoulders about the way they may have played and didn't play up to our full potential. But you know what? We've been looking forward to this. And I think this team is going to get better. I think there's some improvement we can do, and they know that. And on to next week.
Last week you said it's got to be on with this game.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the result that you got today?
I think it's pretty nice. 50-7, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, sweet. I mean, it is. I mean, it's a good victory, and not saying anything negative about them or nothing like that. We wanted to win this football game, and we wanted to handle it. We had them at home, and we wanted to play our best game. And obviously, last year was still on our mind, but I thought our guys did a good job of hiding their emotions and playing the type of football we need to play. Say it again now.
How would you just describe what you witnessed tonight with Joe Burrow?
Yeah.
Proud
well, you know, Joe's meant a lot to Louisiana, and Louisiana is very proud of LSU football. And but, you know, people in Louisiana have heart, man, and when they love you, they love you. And they love Joe, and Joe loves them. So I think it was a combination of both. I think it's to show his appreciation for the state of Louisiana and LSU and what they've done for him and more or less what he's done for us. The guy's been phenomenal.
In the third quarter, the yardage was 371-35.
Yeah.
You know,
not no. I think, and again, we challenged our football team to play the LSU standard performance, and we felt that we're playing at the LSU standard performance.
Did you see the spelling of Joe's name? On his
yeah, pretty cool.
Like it,
well, that's good. Joe wanted that, and that was his appreciation for the state of Louisiana. He asked if he can do it, and I said, hell yeah. You know, I can't say yeah or nay on that. You know, I just know that, again, Louisiana's a special place, man. LSU's a special place. And when you play for the Tigers, you're a Tiger. And that's all that matters.
Grant Delpit looked a little more, I guess, yeah. Mobile today. I guess mm-hmm.
I think the rest really helped him. I think that Jack Marucci did a tremendous job of managing Tommy Moffitt. They had him ready. And I know he wanted to play very well tonight. And he's hungry to finish his career here off in the right way, and I think that he's going to have an excellent next couple of games whenever we play.
Did you ever use any of the playoff rankings
as motivators? No, just beat Texas A&M. And the next one is going to play Georgia, and just take it one game at a time. We all know all that stuff, but you know what? That stuff, you got to win. You got to win, and once you get in the playoffs, you got to win. That's what they call the playoffs. So we got a ways to go. We got a couple of games left, and let's see where it takes us. You know, a good team, obviously. You know, obviously a good team, and Kirby does a great job, and it's going to be a very challenging game.
There'll be some people that'll say, no matter what, you've earned your way into the playoffs at this point, but how hungry do you think you're going
to be? Yeah, we're not buying that. Mm-hmm. No.
Could Joe have worn Burrow if it's spelled that way in the game? Could
say it again.
Could he have worn the way
to
the spell?
If he wanted to, he can do what he wants. What's that?
Did you cry when he?
No, not that I know.
Have you
no.
ever gotten emotional over a player?
No, not like that. No, just no. I think the last time I got that emotional was when we beat Alabama. Obviously, I'm so happy for the state of Louisiana, but I'm very proud of Joe. And Joe and I are close, and the recruiting and his parents and his family—they've trusted in us. They trusted in LSU. They trusted the plan that we gave him. He took a leap of faith. And it worked out for him. Say it again. Yeah. You know, I guess after the season, you may think of that. Things happening so fast right now. Just taking care of the daily task at hand and just focusing in. You know, when you start doing that, you start to relax. There's no time to relax right now. There's time to press on. I think that we mentioned it last night, but we have bigger motivation to get where we want to go, and this team was just in our way, so we didn't want to get too emotional and just and give that game last year a lot of attention. There's a lot of things that we did well this year, being 12-0. And going to play for the SEC championship, I think that was our motivation.
You scored the first five times you had the ball against the defense who improved.
Yes.
How can you describe, why was the offense so good? Was it focus?
Why was our offense so good?
Yeah, just focus.
Yeah,
focus.
Yeah, I think that we had a great game plan. We felt comfortable. I mean, we felt confident going into this game that we could move the football, and we did. You know, really the efficiency of our offense, I thought it'd be efficient, but not just as explosive and break all these records. I mean, we never thought about records or nothing. I did feel that this team could go undefeated. I did feel that we had a good enough football team with a couple of breaks that we, if we played the way we could, I thought that when I looked at the schedule, that we could play with everybody on our schedule and beat them. Because of the coaches we have on our staff, our assistant coaches, because of all the help that we have, all the support we have, and our schedule. I think our schedule fit us. had some great games at home that we needed our crowd. I think our crowd won a lot of games for us. So this is a tremendous year.
People see perfection in the college 12-0, but what were some things that you guys had to, I guess, overcome behind the scenes? If you could share.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had some guys that were eligible to play some games. Some guys wasn't eligible to play. The suspensions, we managed that throughout the whole year. I think that was one. But other than that, we didn't have a lot of, to be honest with you, man, we've had some great leadership. We didn't have a lot of things that internal we had to, like, have team meetings about. There wasn't a lot of that. There wasn't a lot of drama this year. There was just guys that wanted to play football, and I think that's says a lot for the leadership of this football team.
You guys had team meetings last year before the season. What do you think changed from August 2018 to?
Yeah, I'm saying leadership, confidence, players believing, you know, the offensive scheme, the defensive scheme, special teams, our third year together, everything coming together. Give the players credit for leadership.
Was that last play and then the timeout to give Joe that ovation at the end?
Yeah.
Was that part of the plan?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and how after that for Miles to get his touchdown?
It was great. We loved it. We wanted to move the ball. And I'm glad Rashie got that catch. Rashie McMath has done a very good job for it. It was good for Miles to go in there and throw a touchdown pass. We wanted to keep on moving the ball. It wasn't time to sit on the ball yet.
Coach, you take one more, Brett.
Phenomenal. I mean, he made plays with his feet. He played phenomenal tonight. He had some pressure, got some sacks. He kept on fighting back. I think the guy's a phenomenal football player. Thank you, guys.
Anison Bitter Heating and Air Conditioning has always provided prompt, professional, and reliable service. They offer a wide variety of services ranging from emergency repairs to ongoing heating and air conditioning. Anison Bitter is a Ream Team top contractor. Call 665-0199 or visit AnisonBitter.com for more info.
WCK, your home will be okay. With WCK, you're on solid ground today. A reputation for a strong foundation makes us leaders among peers. WCK, foundation repair. WCK, a leader among peers. WCK.
Incorporated is Louisiana Health Service and Indemnity Company.
Need to see a doctor but don't have time to miss work or school? Now you can click when you're sick. Blue Care from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Louisiana lets you and your covered family members see a doctor online when you're sick.
And LSU kind of national, and you made me national. And, you know, you guys, I know you guys take some heat sometimes from us, but. You know, I appreciate all the work you guys do for us.
Joe, how did you decide to wear Burroughs spelled like that for the season?
Yeah, so it came to me kind of early in the week, and I went to our equipment guys to see if we could get it done. You know, I thought it would just be an awesome tribute to the state, to the university, and you know, I think it was great.
Was it just like a nameplate or a full-on
jersey? No, it was full jersey, real deal.
Curious if you could wear it in the game.
I don't know. That didn't really occur to me. I thought it would be awesome to wear for senior night.
Did you ask Go first?
No. I talked to everyone else, though. Talked to everyone else.
Yeah, what's it like to come out here to kind of feel the love that you have, to be adopted, I guess, in such a way?
It's been awesome not only for me, but for my family as well. You know, I told you guys earlier in the week, they come back and tell me stories about everyone just thanking them for sending me down here, and you know, my whole family is like, well, thanks for resurrecting my career and everything you guys have done for me. So, you know, it's been a dream come true. It really has. No, bluntly, no, but you know, it's surpassed all of my expectations, and we have great people, great coaches, you know, great people like you writing about us, and great fans supporting us. Ooh, deep question for me. You know, I've just fought through a lot of adversity, and a lot of the people on our team have. You know, I said it a couple weeks ago, but Lloyd was the last guy signed in the class. Thad was a transfer. Justin was a two-star guy. Clyde was always too short. You know, we have so many guys that have fought through adversity. Coach O fired two places, and I think that's really helped us become who we are.
Running over to the student section there at the end, what were the emotions and why?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously I don't go to class because I take online classes, so I don't get to see any of those people, and I just wanted to kind of see them for the first time and just thank them for, you know, coming to the games, making this the best atmosphere in the country.
He may want to clarify, not go to class. What was it like to play that stadium one last time? What was it like to play in the stadium? And how will you look back on it, on the stadium on Saturday night?
Yeah, it kind of hit me when I was jogging off the field for the last time. You know, this is the best atmosphere in the country. Saturday night in Death Valley, there's nothing like it. And, you know, I'm going to miss it with all my heart. And it's given everything to me, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Your last pass, your walk off the field with that timeout, what was that like for you? What were your thoughts?
I thought I was getting another whole series. They told me I was going in for the whole series, and I was getting ready to get the other play. And Coach O pointed at me, he said, "You're off." And, you know, I kind of knew that was kind of my moment to soak it all in. Tried to embrace the fans the best I could, and, you know, all my teammates kind of mobbed me on the sideline, so that was a special moment for me. You know, if he doesn't win it, it's gonna be tough not to give that guy that award. You know, three of the best receivers in the country, and, you know, Jamar has been unbelievable. Nobody's been able to cover him all year, and, you know, not only is he a great player, but he's a better person and works so hard, and I couldn't be happier for that guy.
I guess there was some concern if you guys weren't coming out too emotional. The first five times you touched the ball, you scored. It seemed like you were cool, calm, collected. Can you speak about that execution?
Yeah, you know, I was kind of worried about it too, but when we got on the field, it just felt like any other game. Business-like, take care of business, get to next week. You know, obviously last year was an emotional game, but we just took care of business like we always do. Business-like approach is all you can ask for. let's worry about the SEC championship first. We got Georgia next week. I think the defense wanted to send a message to the country. You know, they've been criticized for the last couple, you know, that last half of the season, and that was what they were talking about all week. They wanted to make a statement. How many yards did they have? Oh, gosh, 160. That's a pretty dominant performance by those guys, and that's back to the LSU standard. And I know they've worked so hard for it this week, and they're going to continue doing it. No, I think we've always known it since after last year. We knew how many guys we had coming back. We knew the kind of players we had. And if we worked hard this offseason, we could do exactly what we were doing. So this was the plan coming into after fall camp. You know, if we weren't 12-0, we'd be pretty disappointed right now. Yeah, they somehow snuck their way into the media room. But it's been awesome. You know, I always joke with my brother Dan. He finds himself in the middle of the Tiger Walk. He finds himself in the locker room after the games. I'm like, "How are you doing this? How are you getting in here?" He's like, I don't know what to tell you either. I'm just finding my way in here." But it's been, I mean, that's just the kind of people that are here. They've fully embraced me and my family, and it's been awesome.
How much have you visualized the things that have happened this year?
Say that again?
How much have you visualized the things that have happened to you this year?
Since I was 10 years old, this is what I've always wanted to do. You know, I've said in the past, my goal was never to be the quarterback of an NFL team. I wanted to be the quarterback of a top 10 team playing in the national title game, and we have a chance to do that, and this is a dream come true for me.
O said Marcus Allen spoke to the team last night. Yeah. He holds a Heisman trophy. What did he say, and what did you take away from his words?
You know, that was a special moment for us. I mean, he's a guy on the top 100 list in the NFL. It was a lot of great information that he gave to us, and, you know, if I can take anything from that guy, it's unbelievable. And he said he has, you know, if I ever have any questions or any more if he could offer any more information, he would give it to me, and that's the kind of guy he is. You know, I'm honored to have met him and to have him speak to our team.
There'll be some talk that you're in the playoff no matter what you do in the SEC championship. Coach says that he's not buying that. I would imagine you're not buying that either.
We're not buying it. We want an SEC championship as much as we want a national championship. You know, we feel like we've worked for it, and you know, it's all going to come to a point this Saturday.
One more question for Joe.
What do you think has been the key to this team sort of never seeming satisfied, popping wins or being 12-0 or whatever it might be?
You know, I think it started last year. You know, we were 10-3 and felt like we should have won two more games and been 11-1 and in the playoff, and you know, that left a sour taste in our mouths. And we've had a lot of hardworking guys, mature guys in the off season, just working towards this point. They knew the kind of talent we had, the kind of players and coaches that we had, and that's just kind of how we are. Don't be satisfied with 10-3, 9-4. You get to the top.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
The 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge Scoreboard, presented by Home Bank. Good for business, good for life on 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Tigers win it by a score of 50-7 to complete an undefeated regular season. They'll head to Atlanta next Saturday to play the Georgia Bulldogs for the Southeastern Conference Championship. This is the Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge. Let's go down to Tiger Stadium now as the celebrating continues around Baton Rouge. Jacob Hester is down there. He was at field level tonight. Jacob, just kind of paint the picture for me what it was like being on the sidelines tonight, the emotions that were very apparent in this game, how badly LSU wanted to win it and how thoroughly they dominated the game.
Yeah, look, they came out angry. They came out mad. They came out to prove a point and with a purpose, and they did it from the get-go. You could tell the players were completely focused for this one. The crowd was outstanding. And the seniors who played their last game, and even the juniors who were going to have a decision to make, you could tell they took in the moment. They went out there, and every aspect of the game they dominated. I mean, this is one of those complete performances, guys, that we'll talk about for a long time.
All right, when Joe Burrow came out with the special jersey on, it seemed like not just that it was an emotional moment for him, but that it was an emotional moment for everybody else that was surrounding that as well. Just give me an idea of the connection with Burrow and his teammates, because he's, again, we know the whole story. He's not from here. He came here and attached himself to this group. So when he came out in that jersey, it was perfect, it seemed to me.
It was, and it was his idea, something that he talked about throughout the week and something where he wanted to show the fans of LSU, the people of Louisiana, kind of a thank you for accepting him and, you know, getting him to this point. And it was truly a special moment. Not a lot of people knew. Only about 7 or 8 people actually knew that it was going to happen. It was something that, like I said, he wanted to do to show his appreciation. And what a great gesture. I mean, obviously, he's having a little fun there as well, but the purpose of it was to show these fans, hey, you know, I know I'm a transfer. I know I wasn't here full 4 years, but thank you for the support.
What did A&M do defensively tonight that was a little bit different? They actually had a very reasonable defensive effort against Georgia last week, but they were shredded from the very beginning. What looks did they show LSU the Tigers were able to take advantage of, 4 touchdowns in 4 drives to open?
Look, they played way more man coverage than I thought they would against this team, and they were bringing guys from different areas of the defense, and they tried literally everything, guys. I mean, they threw the kitchen sink, and nothing was really sticking, and you can't play man coverage against this team, and if you do, you're going to pay, and you're going to pay by Jamar Chase, you're going to pay by Jefferson, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, it doesn't matter. Guys are going to make you pay for paying man coverage, and so they continued to try to do things all night long to try to stop the LSU offense. They had a little success there in the third quarter against the LSU offensive line, and they struggled a little bit. But once Coach O called the offense over and really had a good talk with them, they came out and they scored the next series. And so there was nothing Texas A&M could do to stop this LSU offense. I mean, they stayed on schedule like they're supposed to. Joe Burrow in the pocket was outstanding yet again. Jamar Chase had another gigantic game. Clyde was able to run the football for almost 5 yards a carry. So they tried, but they couldn't do anything against this LSU offense.
On the other side, Ed Orgeron said that LSU dialed up some different blitzes, some new things. but it was also obvious that that defense had heard everything that was said about them and were going out there to prove a point tonight. But schematically, Jacob, what did you see different tonight?
I thought the defense did a really nice job of changing up their rush. They didn't just rush straight up the field. I mean, they had a ton of twists, a ton of game, a ton of guys blitzing from different areas. Caleb Von Chason had an outstanding football game. He really won all of his individual battles. You saw a guy like Mo Hampton come in. He came in different spots. You had some three safety looks. You had sometimes he'd take Kerry Vincent out of the game, and he would come in to add a safety and take the nickel out. So they changed personnel. They changed a bunch of what they do in the rush game, and it worked against Texas A&M, picking up 7 sacks against mobile quarterbacks as well. I mean, that's a point. These aren't statues standing back there. They can't escape the rush.
They also got Caleb Von Chason loose a couple of times in the first half. It looked like he was more active in the pass rush element tonight as well.
No, he really did. And like I said, it wasn't, you know, Caleb Von for a lot of the year has been kind of a contained rusher. So he's rushed up the field, outside shoulder of the tackle. Tonight he was kind of let loose as far as he had the option to go inside on some up and unders. And as a guy who's blocked people in professional football, that's the toughest thing to stop. I hate it when a guy went up and under because you get your feet moving up the field, and all of a sudden here he comes with the rip move underneath, and he had that ability tonight, and he was covered as far as his contain, so the responsibilities kind of changed up there for him. And like I said, he won all of his individual matchups. He had a big night as far as the sacks, but he was in the backfield all night long.
I almost, when A&M ran the fake punt, I was almost happy. In fact, not almost, I was happy. That's the kind of thing that you really want to fix when you're up 40 points and it doesn't really hurt you. But it appeared to me that the punter just saw something and went, that it wasn't pre-called. What'd you think of that?
I thought it was something he saw as well. And I tried to get Bradley Del Pivito and ask him after the game if that was a call or not. I couldn't get to him because I saw the same thing you saw. It looked like the punter had seen something. And he kind of told himself, all right, if I get this, I'm going to run it. Now, obviously, he probably told the coaching staff, and they probably gave him the green light. But I don't think that was necessarily called a fake. It was just an adjustment they made. And so I agree with you. Good that you see that. Now it's on tape, and now you know you've got to keep somebody there for the punter.
Was that backup personnel in the game? I don't remember. Because if they saw something on film that LSU's turning their backs to the punter, They run it a heck of a lot sooner than I think it was 41-7 when they ran it or whatever it was. So that was it backup personnel they had the breakdown there?
It wasn't completely backup personnel, but you didn't have, you know, there's starters that are on special teams. You didn't have any of those guys in. So some of the unit was the same, but as far as the guys who were starters on offense and defense, they were out of there. And I think they knew they were trying to set up the return, maybe to get Stingley going a little bit. So I think it's something they saw earlier in the game, not necessarily on film, because typically LSU will have two guys rushing the edge just to make sure they don't run any kind of fake. And that was one of the few times they didn't have it.
Georgia next week for the SEC championship. Now, Georgia won big today against Georgia Tech, but it was a costly win for them, and we'll find out exactly how costly probably early in the week. We know that George Pickens, their number two receiver, was thrown out of the game for fighting, and that the conference has already announced that he will miss the first half of next week's game. They are without Lawrence Cager, who is injured and missed this game today and will miss next week's game for sure. But the most probably troubling thing for Georgia is the injury to DeAndre Swift. We don't know how bad it is. Kirby Smart said after the game that he expects him to be ready, but he is the bell cow running back for them. He's an outstanding player, averages over 6 yards a carry. And I don't know if, Jacob, I don't know if you saw the play. If you did, I'd like you to comment on it. He looked like he came up holding his shoulder and was in a considerable amount of pain. So let's look ahead to Georgia, and if you saw the Swift injury.
Yeah, I did see it, and you never know, you know, severity of it, because when you look, Justin Fields a couple weeks ago when he kind of landed on his arm, I thought that he might have done something to his wrist. Obviously, he played today, so you never quite know just off the look of it. But if he is out, I mean, he's their offense, guys. I mean, y'all know that DeAndre Swift is literally the entire offense, it seems like, because Jake Fromm, yet again, was under 50% completion percentage. And you mentioned the receivers being out. I mean, Cager was their go-to guy against Florida. Now Pickens, who's their big play receiver, he had a 41-yard catch in this contest. And he's out the first half. And, look, so you're going to have a little bit of a hobble. DeAndre Swift is what you assume just by watching the injury. And he's big in the pass game as well. I mean, they like to get him involved in all aspects of the game. And so they're going to have to find a way to have some offense in Atlanta, because for whatever reason, Jake Fromm, who was so good completing passes the first 2 years he was at Georgia, is really struggling this year. Now, I know he had four touchdowns, but as far as his completion percentage, it is way down this year. And it's, I think it's the fifth consecutive game he's been at 50% or under. So that's something that's worrisome for Georgia and their football team. And if their bell cow back is not 100%, he is literally their guy. So we'll see how that affects that offense.
We got to get Richard Dixon on the phone because he's our injury guy. Every time we ask about an injury, he can say, I had that already, you know, at some point.
Hey, I think he set a record for LSU surgery, so you're exactly right. Dick Dixon probably had that
him and Will Arnold.
Yeah, the $6 million men. I mean, they've had every procedure.
Hey, Jake, one question though before you go. Hey, what did me and you talk about early on during the season that we tried to tell all the Baton Rouge natives and all LSU Nation that this place has changed drastically, and everybody was like, they eating crow tonight, Big Daddy.
Nah, hey, man, you're exactly right. I mean, we had a chance in the spring to go watch some practices and watch this offense. But, JV, as you know, we go out to the fall scrimmages and we're able to have that access. And the offense, you could tell from day one, was going to be different. Also, something you and I talked about that a lot of people didn't agree with us. We talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We talked about who he was, who he was going to be for this offense. And he has been so special this year. I mean, he has really been that X factor for this offense. I mean, Joe, Jamar Chase, and obviously they do what they do, and they're playing at an elite level. But when you have the air raid like you have, and then you have that other option to be able to run the football and have a complete running back like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and everybody wanted to replace him. Every single person, it seemed like, listening to our shows wanted to replace him with one of the true freshmen. And those guys are going to have their moment at LSU. They're going to shine. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, trust me when I say this, he heard that, and he took it as a challenge, and he kept him off the field. And he continues to be, in my opinion, the most complete back in the SEC.
Jacob, enjoy the night, and it's going to be a fun weekend next Saturday in Atlanta.
It's going to be a great weekend. Can't wait to get there.
All right, Jacob Hester down at Tiger Stadium. Thanks a lot. And we'll take a break. LSU wins it tonight by a score of 50-7 to complete a 12-0 regular season. This is the Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, the First South Farm Credit College Football Scoreboard. First South Farm Credit, financing farms and land since 1916.
All right, so all kinds of stuff happened in college football today. All of the championship games are set. We got a few games that are still in progress. Arizona leads Arizona State 7-3. And Cal and UCLA are tied at 7. Fresno State leads San Jose State 14-3. San Diego State leads BYU 10-3. Those are the games still in progress. And Hawaii and Army go here in about half an hour. All right, everything else has gone final. Number 1 Ohio State, don't think I like saying that very much, beat number 13 Michigan today 56-27. J.K. Dobbins had 211 yards and 4 touchdowns. Chase Young, who had been getting a lot of push for the Heisman, I think it's board media, myself, had a bagel today. No tackles, no assists. He had 2 quarterback pressures. What did you call this game, Justin, when we were talking about Michigan and Ohio State? You had a name for it
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
It was one of those zingers I come up with every now and then.
Yeah,
I just couldn't figure
out. You were not you weren't impressed with Michigan. Michigan did a lot of dumb things in this game. Between turning the ball over deep in Ohio State territory, the 4th and 4 when they've got them ready to punt.
Oh,
they're offside.
I said they tricked it off.
Yeah,
okay. They tricked it off. They basically did. I mean, they had an opportunity to compete. And going down on the 10-yard line, and early on, they're down 14-13, fumble the ball. Next, Ohio State gets the ball back, go down and score. They have the opportunity to stop them on the 3rd and short. They jump off sides, give them a first down. They score after that, and it was all she wrote after that.
Shea Patterson threw for 305 yards, but, you know, Ohio State pulled away in the 3rd quarter, and this thing was decided by the time they started the 4th. Number 3, Clemson beat South Carolina 38-3. 3 touchdown passes for Trevor Lawrence. He also rushed for 66 yards. Dabo Swinney went off in the press conference. We may have that audio a little bit later on.
What?
He's not happy that basically the playoff committee is not treating them well. He said, you know, we beat South Carolina.
You play the Sisters of the Blind and Poor.
Well, he took up a full-throated ACC defense today.
The only team in the ACC.
Is there anybody happy with how the playoff committee is treating them?
Nobody.
I guess Ohio State, other than that, no. Sure. Number 4, Georgia pounded Georgia Tech 52-7. Jake Fromm threw four touchdown passes. DeAndre Swift had 73 yards, but again, he left with what looked like a shoulder injury. Georgia's going to be without their leading receiver in this game. Lawrence Cager is out. We're talking about the SEC Championship game. George Pickens, thrown out of this game for fighting, has been suspended by the Southeastern Conference for the first half of next week's game. And DeAndre Swift's status, I would call in question at this point. Iron Bowl was a classic. Number 15, Auburn beat number 5, Alabama, 48-45. Mac Jones ended up throwing for 335 yards and four touchdowns for the Tide, but he also threw two pick sixes, one of them that went back better than 100 yards. Alabama missed a 30-yard field goal late in the game that would have tied it. They had stopped Auburn fourth down and four. They end up with too many people on the field. They would have had one more shot with about a minute to go back down the field. Najee Harris had 146 yards and a touchdown, but Alabama loses to Auburn, and their playoff hopes are officially dead. That felt good to say.
Oh, 100%.
Number 6, Utah beat Colorado 45-15. Tyler Huntley threw a couple of touchdown passes for the Utes, who really blew the doors off of what was a relatively competitive game in the first half. It was 17-7 at the break, but Utah pulled away. So if LSU beats Georgia and Ohio State beats Wisconsin next week, this essentially comes down to Utah and number 7 Oklahoma, who beat number 21 Oklahoma State tonight, 34-16. Kennedy Brooks rushed for 160 yards and a touchdown for Oklahoma as they win Bedlam. And that, coupled with the number 12 Wisconsin beating number 8 Minnesota 38-17, and Baylor's 61-6 win over Kansas. Basically, what you've got here next week is if Ohio State and LSU both win, it'll be Utah, is provided that they win in the Pac-12 championship game, and the winner of the Big 12. Justin, this is just my initial read. I'm going to have to go back and look a little bit closer, but my thought is this. If Ohio State and LSU both win, and Clemson's the number 3 team, the number 4 team will be Oklahoma if they win. It will be Utah if Baylor wins. I think they go in that order. I think it's Oklahoma, then Utah, then Baylor when it's, you know, said and done, if they all win.
Yeah, so I got this text earlier from Josh Booty. He says, if Utah loses to Oregon, Oklahoma loses to Baylor next week, Georgia loses to LSU, Baylor gets in.
They would have two. If Oklahoma beat, well.
Yeah, if Oklahoma loses to Baylor next week Oklahoma. And Georgia loses to
Baylor would be in. Yeah, if Utah loses, yeah. Yes. I just think of the three teams, Oklahoma, Utah, and Baylor. You know, obviously Oklahoma and Baylor both can't have one loss. Somebody's got to win the game next week. But if Oklahoma won it, I think it's them. If Utah and Baylor both win, I think it's Utah. Yeah. That's my opinion right now. Number 10, Penn State beat Rutgers 27-6. Number 11, Florida beat Florida State 40-17. Gators finished the regular season 10-2. Kyle Trask threw three touchdown passes through for 343 yards. Number 14, Oregon, who saw their playoff hopes dash last week, wins the Civil War 24-10 over Oregon State. Ducks finish at 10-2. They're going to the Pac-12 championship game against Utah. Number 16, Notre Dame beat Stanford today 45-24. Irish finished the regular season at 10-2. And for Stanford, a really disappointing but out of nowhere. Just don't expect the David Shaw team to go 4-8.
Yeah, that was a big surprise.
Big surprise. Number 23, Iowa State beaten today. Kansas State beat Iowa State 27-17. It was Kentucky over Louisville 45-13. Wildcats finish up at 7-5. Northwestern beat Illinois 29-10, but the Illini getting in a bowl game anyway. They finish at 6-6. Old Oaken Bucket won by Indiana 44-41 in two overtime. Sorry about that, Gordy. Hoosiers finish at 8-4. Syracuse beat Wake Forest 39-30. Wake going bowling, but Syracuse finishes at 5-7. It was Air Force over Wyoming 20-6. Rice opened the season 0-9, won their last three games to finish at 3-9. They beat UTEP 30-16. UNLV over Nevada 33-30 in overtime. Temple beats UConn 49-17. Louisiana Tech beat Texas San Antonio 41-27. La Tech finishes at 9-3. Tough season for Frank Wilson. UTSA finishes at 4-8. Gonna make it? You gonna make it? Yeah.
I don't know their expectations over there, dude. So, I mean, they gave Larry Coker a decade, so they might as well give Frank Wilson some time.
Was he there that long?
A long time. Yeah. I don't know if it was full decade, but he was there for a minute now.
We'll see. Boston College beat Pittsburgh 26-19. Duke over Miami 27-17. Michigan State beat Maryland 19-16. It was Tennessee over Vanderbilt 28-10 in a game that was delayed by weather twice. UAB beat North Texas 26-21. Utah State over New Mexico 38-25. SMU beat Tulane 37-20. Disappointing finish for Tulane. At one point they were 5-1, looking really good. They had that miraculous win against Houston on a Friday night, but they finished the season with four straight losses. Georgia Southern beat Georgia State 38-10. It was Navy over Houston 56-41. North Carolina beat North Carolina State 41-10. Mack Brown gets bowl eligible in his final game in year number one. UL Lafayette held on to beat UL Monroe 31-30. Cajuns' first ever 10-win season, and they will be in the Sun Belt Championship game at Appalachian State. And the Southern Jaguars won the Bayou Classic 32-28. So with all of that,
Baton Rouge is live right now. With
yeah,
sports,
everybody, everybody's happy yeah. Right now. So let me give you then the schedule we know for next week for championship week. Pac-12 championship game is on Friday night. That is going to be Utah and Oregon. That is in San Francisco at Levi's Stadium. Obviously, Georgia and LSU game time for the SEC championship game is 3 o'clock our time. Big 12 championship is the early game. That's at 11 o'clock from Arlington, from Jerry World. That'll be Baylor and Oklahoma. The MAC championship game, Miami of Ohio, Central Michigan. We told you the Sun Belt Conference championship game. They play that at the home field of the higher seed. So they will play that in Boone, North Carolina at App State. And UL Lafayette, Florida, and App State won that game in a Cajun Field in the regular season.
Yeah, bad.
Very easily. So see if the Cajuns can turn that around. Coosa Championship, Florida Atlantic and UAB. The American Championship game, Cincinnati and Memphis, part two. And then, let's see, the Mountain West is Boise State and Hawaii. ACC Championship game, Virginia and Clemson. Virginia won that game yesterday and became the seventh different coastal champion in 7 years. Big 10 championship game, Ohio State and Wisconsin, is the late game from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indy at 7 o'clock. And that is your college football scoreboard. We'll take a break and be back with more. This is the Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
The 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge Scoreboard, presented by Home Bank. Good for business, good for life on 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Tigers win it by a score of 50-7 tonight to finish the season at 12-0. This is a Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge. I'm Charles Handegriff along with Justin Vincent. So with everything that went on in college football today, the general consensus is that LSU could even lose next week and still make the playoff. I didn't think that there was any doubt that Joe Burrow was going to win the Heisman before today, short of him going out and throwing, you know, half a dozen interceptions or something tonight. But if he needed to put that into concrete anymore, it seemed like the push was for Chase Young this week. Like I said, I thought the national media was bored.
Yeah, because Joe Klatt was killing me.
Well, yeah, I don't get where his campaign's coming from. Look, Young is fantastic. He's a fantastic player.
Dynamic.
And he's going to be a great pro for a long time. But if Tyrann Mathieu didn't win the Heisman as a defensive player, if Manti Te'o didn't win the Heisman as a defensive player, if Ndamukong Suh didn't win, I'm talking about some of the most dominant defensive players in the last year, then he's not going
and
to win it.
To boot, he has zero touchdowns. Heisman is complete, in my mind. That's the way I view it.
I get it. If they were going to push somebody for Ohio State To me, the guy to push would have been Dobbins, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Because, and he had the biggest day today. Justin Fields has had a fantastic year.
No doubt.
But there's no, it's not even close to Burrow's numbers. So if you got to come with something different. So has J.K. Dobbins been the best running back in the country for most of the year? Taylor at Wisconsin.
Yeah, Chubba
Hubbard at Oklahoma State. But I would tell you that looking at him, yeah, Dobbins has been one or two.
It has to be the Heisman, obviously, in my eyes. And if you go by their terms and their kind of their guidelines as far as what it takes to win it, it's a complete. It's a domination of the game and to change the landscape of the game, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams. He plays just defense. And like you just said, he's very dynamic. He does – some amazing things lined up at the end. I mean, he's whipping people. It almost seems like they're standing still half the time. But when you talk about the Heisman, if he has a couple pick sixes or some fumble returns for a touchdown, then I might jump on the train too.
Yeah, but you can do some things to neutralize defensive players when it comes to individual numbers. Okay, I was blown away that Penn State tried to block in with one guy. And not only that, but to give him a free release. I felt sorry for that tackle Fires because they were putting him at such a disadvantage. So what Michigan did today was if they didn't put two people on him, they ran away from him or they trapped him a couple of times. So listen, it's not that you don't have to account for him because he is so good, but he got shut out today. So that's
the end
of
that. They put him back to his side against Penn State. And the back didn't even block him. They free released him.
Right.
I was like, well, at least throw a chicken wing out there or something, like to try to disrupt his path.
If LSU and Ohio State play, and that could very well happen, we'll spend the entire lead up to the game going, what the hell are they going to do about two? Or how are they going to block two?
In my personal opinion,
you better block him with more than one guy.
In my personal opinion, if it comes to that time, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that his play in that game will be at a minimum because they will eliminate him.
They will
come up with a plan to get the ball out of Joe's hand quick and not give him an opportunity to tee off. There'll be some things that doesn't develop, and you're going to take some time, but they're going to put a back to his side, a tight end, whatever it is. They're going to try to minimize whatever he does quickly.
Got
to
be a little bit better than they were in the second half tonight.
Yes.
The protection broke down a couple of times.
But it did.
That's another one for another day. Alabama losing, okay?
Yes.
The good, the bad, and the ugly with Mac Jones, okay? He threw for 335 yards. He threw four touchdown passes. He threw – two other touchdown passes to Auburn.
Tell the truth.
And one of them, the backbreaker was the 100 yards. I mean, at that point, Alabama's going in. They're going to score. They're going to go up two possessions there.
Do it behind Najee.
And he hit him in the back.
Yeah.
So the ball holds up. Look, Auburn got a break. Most of the time you throw a ball that hits a guy in the back that's not looking for it, it's going to fall straight to the ground. This one
went up there,
held up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things. Much as it irks me to have to actually agree with something there, I thought Saban actually had a point at the end of the first half. I thought, listen, you're going to tell me they're going to mark the ball ready for play, snap it all in 1 second. That's hard to do.
Oh, no, okay? No. By rule, it's not supposed to be like that.
Well, you can't clock it with less than 3 seconds, okay? So can you snap it and, you know, get that off in 1 second?
Negative.
Probably.
Negative.
Probably not.
The snap itself is one.
Yeah. Now, at the end, I thought they caught him flat-footed because they sent the quarterback back out on the fourth down and four, and they got him in a substitution infraction, and he was a little bit steamed about that. I thought that one was fair game.
Oh, 100%.
He gets aggravated when he can't get his substitutions out there. And listen, the game goes real fast now.
And if the offense is not substituting,
yeah,
you're on your own player.
It goes real, real fast. And then the Georgia piece that we talk about now, what do you think's going through their head now? Be without your top receiver for the whole game. Be without your number two receiver for half the game, and I got to imagine they're holding their breath on Swift right now.
Listen, Kirby's clinched up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they won.
Wouldn't you be?
Oh, no question. They won, and but obviously they know, just like we know, that's a tall glass of water. And they have an opportunity to have a great year. We have an opportunity to have a great year, but they have some nicks. And that was the thing for us. We were hoping we walked out of this game with minimals, if any.
And
we did.
And they did. I can't imagine what was going through Pickens' head when he threw those punches and threw the guy.
And you saw it. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
You saw it. I didn't. Yeah.
They're locked up on the far sideline in the end zone. The ball is thrown completely on the other side of the field. And Georgia is up 5 touchdowns. The game is over, except the clock hasn't expired. And he goes and he'd already been suspended for a half before that. It really put his team at a huge disadvantage for next week with that. But that's their problem.
Hey, you, listen, I'm all about, you know, what's fair, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. That's none of our business.
No, and look, if it was
out there and play ball,
if it
man.
Was somebody for Clemson or you know another team that's playing next week, we wouldn't care.
No.
But this is the team that LSU plays next week.
No
so
doubt.
Now all of a sudden we're paying attention. We'll take a break. We're going to turn this into Eagle 98.1 Game Day at the top of the hour, and we'll take your phone calls. We'll do that at 11 o'clock. This is the Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
The 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge Scoreboard, presented by Home Bank. Good for business, good for life on 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Tigers win it by a score of 50-7. Finish the regular season with a perfect 12-0 record. Headed to Atlanta, the Southeastern Conference Championship game against Georgia. Let's bring Gordy Rush in. He was down on the field at Tiger Stadium tonight. Gordy, you've seen plenty of games in that stadium, played in plenty of games in that stadium. The emotion tonight seemed unique surrounding all of the things we've been talking about all week, Joe Burrow last year's game, the playoff committee, et cetera. So what was it like to be down on the field and witness it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It's the most complete game I've seen LSU play. You know, I think the closest thing maybe is that 2011 Virginia Tech game, if you remember early in the season, that one. But it still didn't have the edge that this one had. And you know, just kind of being out in the field, being around the atmosphere, you know, you had a who's who on the sideline. It had that Alabama-type game feel. And, you know, just talking to the people around the A&M side, they knew what was coming to them. You know, A&M had 6 returning starters on offense, I think 3 or 4 on defense. And basically, the main players for A&M that were a part of that game a year ago really weren't part of it. And they were playing so many young people, and it's like – Big Brother got into a fight and jacked LSU, and Big Brother's not here, and Little Brother had to step up and come take their whip, and then that's about the equivalent of what happened.
Defensively, it seemed like they played with such an edge, such an emotion tonight, but was there anything different that you saw schematically that stood out to you?
No, you know, I was really surprised. No, to answer your question, I think they just played much more disciplined and played within the scheme. I was really surprised that we didn't see more 2-back out of Texas A&M. They've had some success with that, and more double and triple option. I don't know Mon's exact health. Obviously, he was healthy enough to play. He had a knee brace on, and I know how much they wanted to utilize him in the run game, but I was surprised that A&M got away from the run game as early as they did and tried to throw the football, because it was only going to snowball from them, you know, from there, rather. Their best chance of staying in this football game was to run clock and be able to run the football, and that won the case tonight.
The first 4 drives, it's about as perfect a outing as you can have, both on offense and defense. Was there anything that A&M could have done differently that you looked at and said, man, if it was me, I would have tried this, because they just got at the wrong end of the avalanche from the very beginning?
No, not at all. I mean, Charlie, they, you know, to me, they weren't able to get a push on the line of scrimmage. The offensive line was overwhelmed in terms of run blocking. And then, you know, especially on against the LSU's peso package, that sub package, when they go quick with Marcel Brooks and Clark comes in as a defensive linebacker, the spot that Divinity played earlier in that set. And they just couldn't handle him on the edge rush. I don't know it was what it was tonight. It wasn't going to be A&M's night. LSU was the better football team. The fact that LSU executed on a high level, and the fact that they just played with an absolute axe to grind, is why you wind up with a 50-7 score.
I watched the entire game between Georgia and Texas A&M a week ago, and since that's LSU's next opponent, wanted to get a good look. And that game, I thought A&M had a chance to win it. It wasn't it wasn't a manufactured type deal where, oh, well, this was a cosmetic score. They had the ball in Georgia territory with about 3 minutes to go and couldn't punch it in, end up losing the game by one score. So when you – I don't know how much you've had a chance to look at Georgia, but when you look at them, this was a team – we hate to play comparative scores. You get yourself in trouble doing that. But last week, A&M gave them all they wanted in Athens, and tonight – LSU blew the doors off of them, and LSU sees Georgia next week. So how do you see the matchup?
Well, you got to like it. I mean, you know, simply, you know, looking at Georgia, they have not been, you know, they haven't been explosive on offense. Obviously, Swift is a heck of a running back, and you got to imagine they're going to try and play power football and run the football. But Fromm is not, he's definitely an NFL prospect. They have not been elite throwing the football. Cager's hurt, their top receiver. Second receiver got in a fight at Georgia Tech. He's going to miss the first half of the football game. And I know Georgia's really good on defense, but you know, I just don't see anybody stopping this LSU offense. So you look at the matchup, LSU's just got so much more firepower than Georgia.
We watched Jimbo Fisher call plays here for a very long time. He is notoriously meticulous about keeping balance on neutral downs to mm-hmm. the point where we used to keep that as kind of a running joke. It's one of the reasons I like him as a play caller. But when you fall behind like that, it goes right out the window. You can't do that. Kirby Smart, it seems to me, has a lot of Jimbo Fisher to him, wanting to keep that offensive balance. Yep. They're not running the much up-tempo stuff. They're not running the wide-open stuff that a lot of people are running. It's the most conventional offense left in the conference. So you fall behind there, and I think it's a very tough deal. So you can use your, hey, they need to get off to a great start next week, right?
Well, I mean, you go through all the cliches, Charlie, but I mean, who played LSU as well as anyone? I think that you got to look at Auburn and Florida, and what they really did well is that they had some success running the football. The quarterback was activated at times as a runner, and they play action past, you know, against LSU a little bit. You know, can Georgia do that? Fromm's not going to run a whole bunch, but I think you've got to be able to have some sort of time of possession. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself in a track meet, and you don't have the horses to run with LSU. And I think that's what you got to, you know, that's the questions that you have to ask yourself if you're Kirby Smart and that Georgia staff. And let's face it, nobody did a better job of handling LSU this year than Auburn. In the circumstances here, I thought Kevin Steele did a great job of mixing it up, keeping the ball in front of him, making Burrow and company take, you know, check the ball down and not getting beat deep and not giving up the big plays and doing a halfway decent job of trying to keep some possession.
Gordy, I appreciate the time. I know it's been a difficult day for you, the grieving process with Purdue losing the old Oaken Bucket today. So I appreciate you.
I really didn't need that stab. It's been a glory. You know, you win 50-7, and you know Tanner Griffith, you know, is going to knee you in the nuts.
Yeah, you know,
11 o'clock at night on a Saturday.
Double overtime though. It was a hell of a game. I know you were working. I watched it though. They gave it everything they had. Gordy, thanks.
JV, this is just take notes here. How much abuse a kind, cold-blooded man. Team member gets,
bro. Cold world we live in, man.
Thank you, Gordy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys.
All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll turn it into Eagle 98.1 Game Day. Get your phone calls in now. 499-9898. We'll open up the phone lines. This is the Scoreboard Show, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge.